Welcome to the podcast on Natural Dallas, or the Pond for short. Here's where we take the measure of the natural world that is all around us,
probing its secrets,
and beholding its mysterious wonders.
The flora, the fauna,
the earth below our feet, and the sky above our heads.
All is fair game as we wade ever more deeply into the waters of discovery.
This podcast is brought to you by the staff of the Dallas Public Library,
where we strive to connect the curious with the passionate
and foster a culture of lifelong learning.
The views shared on this podcast are those of its participants and not those of the library or the city of Dallas.
Let's get started.
Well, welcome back to The Pond. I'm here with Gwen Eichen with TWA, and I'd love to hear more about you and Texas Wildlife Association.
The Texas Wildlife Association is a nonprofit here in Texas, and they're focusing on educating everyone about habitat and protecting property rights and conserving those efforts for those who value stewardship with the wildlife here. And I work as an educator with what's called their Conservation Legacy Department. And we focus on school groups and adults and even just nature centers, just trying to connect that bridge between human impact and nature and stewardship actions we can work on to support wildlife here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself as well.
I'm currently an educator. I'm also studying for my graduate degree for wildlife conservation. I'm just a true nature nerd, grew up in Dallas and all of our urban wildlife areas, and visited most of the state parks and national parks in the U.S. Just love being outdoors, and I've just found that education was just a great segue of getting more people connected. I've done a lot of research on different species, and that's fun, and you can really kind of hunker down and focus on that. But when you actually get to talk to kids all day and other adults and, you know, make these connections, it's just a lot more valuable.
Well, I'm excited about this topic that we're going to be discussing today. We're going to be talking about soil. Let's get right into it. What is soil and what is a soil profile?
Soil is kind of complex. A lot of people just want to say it's dirt, especially when we ask kids, what's soil? The first answer is, oh, it's dirt. And we try to tell them, if you're going to think like a scientist, don't say dirt. Dirt is what comes in our shoes. And dirt, you can still specify what the materials is, whether it's pet hair or cookie crumbs or the soil from the outside. So true soil is kind of like a conglomerate of different things. It has air particles, it has water, decayed plant matter, and even animal remains, and then different kinds of rocks. And then the profile is when you actually kind of take a cutting, like a cookie cutter or cake slice, out of the soil, and you get to see each layer and how it's weathered over time.
How do we classify soils? And what types of soils do we have in North Texas?
So that question's a little hard to answer just because worldwide, so many different countries and organizations have so many different ways that they classify soil and how they've broken it up through their universities and studies. But for the U.S., we use the USDA. They have a soil taxonomy, and there's a lot. And they've broken it up into different orders and suborders, and it's measured based off the parent material, how deep it goes, the temperature. So total, though, they have 12 orders over all of the United States. Texas has 9 of those orders in our state. And for the DFW counties, I would say there's 3 or 4 specific types, but the majority of DFW, more on the Dallas side, is Blackland Prairie with a Houston black kind of clay mixture of soil. Like, to actually explain what our soil is, it's long and the listeners would have no idea what I'm saying. But Houston black is the most basic answer you could give for what's right here.
And so if I were to go to a soil scientist and say Houston black, they'd
Yes,
you know,
they would
be
know what
oriented
you were saying.
And know.
They'd be proud of you, too.
Okay.
They're like,
okay,
yes,
great.
It's exactly what we're looking for.
Okay, great. Well, listeners, if you ever come across Gwen in a soil class of some kind, say Houston black. That's the answer. All right, great. Well, thank you. What kinds of organisms can be found in soil, and what do they do?
Lots of organisms, and a good majority of the actual organisms on our planet are in the soil that we don't even notice. So there's bacteria, there's fungi, there's algae, protozoans, just going way back to, you know, microbiology in school, if you ever took that class, of all these little creatures you've never seen before and you hated looking at them in the microscope. They're all down there. And then there's tons of bigger, like insects, different ants, earthworms, and then of course you get larger rodents, armadillos, lizards, snakes. So there's just, even birds, there's a lot of creatures that are actually down there.
And do those organisms impact the soil in a specific way, or do they what contribute to the soil classification of some kind?
Yeah, definitely. So they all kind of have a role to play. So the bacteria and fungi, the algae, so they'll, some of them are consumers of other bacteria. A lot of them are decomposers and break down the waste of plants and animals, which needs to be done. And because of all of this, the function that they give to the ecosystem is now it's a media for the plants to grow in and for their roots to uphold in. And it'll regulate nutrients throughout, and different gases of the atmosphere will go through the soil, like our nitrogen and carbon. So we need the soil to be there. It provides animal habitat for some of those larger species I mentioned. It also cycles our water. It purifies it and filters it through our aquifers. And we need that soil to be there. Our water would not be as delicious as it is now. And just physical stability, even for us, for what we're building on top of and walking around on, you know, if we didn't have the stable soil from all these organisms, we wouldn't have structurally sound buildings.
So that sounds like a lot of important ecosystem services, if we can call them that. An ecosystem service, do you have a basic definition of what that is?
It's providing a natural resource that we can't really supplement ourselves. And so we're depending on it. And it's been built over almost millennium of years, just continuance. So that's why it's so hard to even understand, is we forget that it even matters. It's just the ground. But those who do study soil and agronomy and stuff like that are so immersed in it and understanding the history of it and how it formed.
It's something that is definitely kind of in the background. And it is something I agree that people take for granted and don't realize all of the really amazing functions that soil provides for ecosystem, but also for human habitation in this urban environment. You were mentioning building upon it, and I'm sure that the Houston Black has a different kind of impact on buildings and foundations than other soil profiles. That's just fascinating that whole areas have been, research areas and projects have been built upon understanding what soil is and how it functions, and really incredible. Did you have anything else to add about ecosystem services?
I will mention, though, when I started learning about soil, so I had to take a class in undergrad, and we learned about the 12 orders of soil, and it was actually really exciting to learn that there's actually an order of soil that's gelatinous. And like, we were joking in class, like all these different structures of soil, and I was like, oh, is there a jello soil? And the professor was like, actually, yes. And I was a little dumbfounded and, you know, like silent, like, oh. It's not in Texas, sadly, but it's where we get a lot of freezing temperatures and the permafrost in the soil, so near the two Arctic circles. And as they get probably a little lower down than the actual circle itself, but as the temperatures change and the soil freezes and defrosts, it'll get kind of a gelatinous texture to it. While parts of it, the water suspended in that soil, will defrost and refreeze. And so it's a little squishy, bouncy, a lot of mosses and lichens grow there. And it was just kind of cool and interesting to learn that, you know, it's not always just this stable or muddy or sandy that we think about. There's just so much more to it.
You know, you mentioned it. It's kind of like an aside, like joke. And then it was like, your professor, well, let me correct you here. So that's great. That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Have there been any health and medical benefits that are derived from soil?
The number one should be cleaning our water. So soil filters it out. It goes and trickles down every time it rains and refills our aquifers. And if your city uses a well to pump the water out, as opposed to using lake water or such, we need that soil to be cleaning it out and purifying it. Also with our agriculture industry, just the study of soil for all these crops that we grow, mining, landscaping for our yards and building, and just construction of different kinds. Concrete is made from soil and different quantities of different textures. And so understanding that science is just, so many industries depend on it. And when I teach schools and I try to get them to understand, you know, what career could you have where you have to study soil, and even the sport industry, because a lot of kids, they, you know, they want to be football stars or baseball or something, or even just be a physical therapist for those athletes. You know, you have to understand what your playing field is going to be on and how to have a really structurally sound baseball field or basketball court, whatever sport you want to play. You got to understand it. So it kind of opens their eyes to how much we use soil. It might not be for physical health, for one, but it might not be all medical, but it's still relatable to our everyday lives.
Yeah. The foundation, as you know.
Yeah, the foundation.
So maybe not a completely direct impact, but definitely impact further down the line. What is the role of soil in an urban and suburban area? And is it any different from rural areas?
Well, it can really affect the water cycle in itself. So the more we build in these urban and suburban areas, there'll be a runoff effect when it's raining and you see all the water going into the gutters. Originally, that water was supposed to go into the soil and was supposed to filter down. And now we've channeled it so it can be used for us, but also how it gets out of the way. And so we can, you know, keep driving, keep going to work. And we'll have incidences of flooding in a lot of our cities. And that's an issue that we've caused. The rural areas don't have that issue as much because they haven't channelized the creeks and the rivers. And so it's more of the natural flow. And because of that, so water regulations would be very different, say in Dallas compared to a smaller, you know, city south of here like Maypearl, something really tiny where they get their water in a different way. And also just the nutrients that it provides, but then the biodiversity of life that lives off of it. Well, DFW, for one, we have the Trinity River. A lot of people don't really appreciate how beautiful it is and how many animals are able to correspond through it, and that it connects most of DFW, and then it will continue going all the way to Houston to the ocean. And so our suburban and urban areas are greatly affecting that compared to the rural areas.
The change of the environment from mostly grassland, prairies, agriculture to a built environment really can have some great impacts on the water cycle. Yeah. And you said the infiltration of water that would have been soaked in, but now is runoff. So yeah. And I know that there has been more of a movement to create rain gardens and increase infiltration in urban areas to try to restore a more natural state. Hopefully we'll be seeing more of that because I think little by little people are appreciating the importance of soils and how it does improve water quality and also quality of life for us in urban areas.
Now, even at like Home Depot or any outdoor store, you can get rainwater harvesting barrels for your house that collects the rainwater off your roof. People have even started planting different kinds of sedges and grasses in their rain gutter that helps filter that water. They won't use that water for your house just because of how acidic or alkaline it is, but you can use it to water your plants. And you'll have that backup of water without running up your water bill during the summer. So there's more and more benefits. Like even if you are in the city, we're trying to make practices where you can be more sustainable using the water that we have.
Before that house was built, that water would have just landed on the ground, gone into the dirt, but I mean soil. You know, afterwards, there's this impermeable surface there. And so, yeah, collecting that rainwater is a form of returning to a more natural state and using it on your property that way. What are urban soil issues that can be addressed by citywide planning initiatives?
First would be addressing those runoff issues that we were just talking about. When you see a new neighborhood being built, a lot of them have a culvert that they make, almost as if they make it a cute little pond out front, and they'll add a water feature so the water's not sitting still, but that's to address the runoff coming off the concrete of the street. So that's a great practice that's been in place, but it's only in, you know, probably these neighborhoods built in the last like 10 to 15 years. So the older neighborhoods still have those issues. Planting native species in your yard and landscaping is a great benefit because that means you need less water. A lot of our, you know, native species are used to our hot drought summers and their roots are going to go down. Some of them can go down up to like 14 feet. And so you don't have to worry about watering it every morning or twice a day, even for some people with their plants. And you're also going to bring back more biodiversity because those native plants are going to encourage more pollinating species to come back and then more native birds. And those are all issues that we hear about when we talk about nature, but it all stems back to the actual soil that is in your yard.
And do those protect the soil, I guess, better than non-native species because they are able to withstand those kind of conditions?
Yes, and the lack of chemicals people need to use to get rid of insects, get rid of mites, fungus, things like that. Once they understand what a healthy soil environment is and they encourage those creatures to be in their garden. I have a native butterfly garden and I love all of the little leaf hoppers and spiders and true bugs just to be running around because they have a role to play. And because they're going to eat any of the mites or, you know, something that's going to eat off my plants, it's just going to build that food chain up. And it starts with the soil and making sure you have, not that I go and dig out Houston Black somewhere and you can't go to Home Depot. I'm like, this is what I need. but just at least understanding the textures of the soil and knowing what you're looking for.
Are there any soil conservation initiatives in the North Texas area that you know of?
I wish there was like a soil club that we could all get together, but there are a few organizations for soil health and even water management. There's a few nonprofits you can find online, and then there's an Association of Texas Soil and Water Conservation Districts that kind of bridge the gap between the government agencies and their regulations and the public and what you can do for your land. And then the United States has the Natural Resource Conservation Service, NRCS, which is so much great information. And they have a Texas urban and rural conservation project, which is just more education online and places that you can go, like AgriLife extension offices or different landscaping firms that are using sustainable practices. Another place I wanted to mention is the Texas Worm Ranch, which is in Garland. So they actually teach people about composting and using worms for that and making, say, a compost tea with that soil and the water. And they're just a family-run business, but they're a great resource for all of DFW, and they do workshops all the time.
Are there any citizen science projects that focus on soil that our listeners can get involved with?
There's the Master Naturalists, the Master Gardeners, and Master Composters. And these are all just volunteer-based organizations you can join at just about any age and learn more about what we're doing in Texas and different practices for these things. And so they're all going to have projects throughout their counties and cities, which are always great to join up with. Your local nature centers, they're all going to be soil nerds also. The Texas Discovery Gardens at Fair Park, they're a great one. And then any city or school gardens, you know, they always, if your kids are in school, you know, talk to their school if they have a garden and what you can do to help. And you can compost at home. And then there's a few, I would say, like community gardens throughout the city that are recognized. I know the Girl Scouts of Northeast Texas. They're kind of in South Dallas, kind of close to Duncanville. They have a butterfly pavilion that has a stem of excellence garden. And then the Parkland Hospital has a pollinator sanctuary. So these are just really big projects that people can come and contribute to and help with the community soil.
I've learned a lot about soil today. I want to thank you for joining us today, and I'll let our listeners know in a newsletter, we're going to feature some of these groups that you mentioned and talk more about soils and send out some links. So if you're not a member or not signed up for our newsletter, then sign up so that you can get this great information too. Well, thank you again for joining us.
I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to The Pond Podcast, brought to you by the staff of the Dallas Public Library, where we inspire curiosity, connect people, and advance lives. See you next time, and until then, keep your eyes open for the natural world all around us.